You're tuned in to Due North on CFUR 88.7 FM, brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. The following is a news summary presented Thursday, May 14th. Starting with the weather, courtesy of Environment Canada, for Prince George, Claylie Tanay, partly cloudy with a zero chance of meatballs, though wind is coming from the southwest at 20 kilometers an hour, gusting to 40 clicks, becoming light later Thursday evening, and a low of plus 2. Friday, May 15th, a mix of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of showers late in the afternoon, wind becoming southwest 20 kilometers an hour in the afternoon. A high of 12 degrees and a UV index of 5 or moderate before moving into the partly cloudy nighttime with a 30% chance of showers early in the evening. A southwest wind of 20 clicks becomes lighter in the evening and a low of plus 2 is predicted. Saturday, May 16th, a mix of sun and cloud with a high of 13 is predicted and a clear nighttime sky with a low of plus 1. Sunday, May 17th, sunny skies are predicted with a high of 15 degrees with a clear nighttime sky and a low of plus 1. Monday, the 18th of May, again, sunny skies are predicted with a high of 15 degrees and a cloudy nighttime with a 30% chance of showers are expected with a low of plus 5. Tuesday, May 19th, cloudy skies with a 40% chance of showers accompanied by a high of 15 degrees are expected during the day, followed by cloudy nighttime periods and a low of plus 3. And for Thursday, May 14th, the local air quality report for Prince George, Claylie Tanay. The air is of extremely good quality, with the large majority of air monitoring stations registering less than 1 part per million. This refers to particulate matter, 2.5 microns across or smaller, with the exception of one monitoring station located in our city's BCR site, registering 4 parts per million, which is still extremely good quality. And now, with those forecasts out of the way, it's time for the Firecast. Information primarily derived from the British Columbia Wildfire Service. According to BC Wildfire Service's interactive map, for the date of May 14th, 2026, there are 8 active wildfires in the Prince George Fire Center, 4 of which are listed as under control, 3 of which listed as being held, and 1 listed as being out of control. That is the Falk Creek Fire, located in the northeast corner of the Northern Rocky Mountains Provincial Park, south of the Alaska Highway, just under 100 kilometers southwest of Fort Nelson. Officially discovered on May 8th, its current size is listed at 1 hectare. The BC Wildfire Service warns, forecasted warmer temperatures and drier conditions in the fire center may contribute to higher risk during burning, so if you're planning on having a fire this weekend, be very careful. The release states that there is a period of increased wildfire risk in early spring called the spring dip, and the spring dip happens every year. Fire bans have been announced for the Prince George Fire Center effective at 12 p.m. Tuesday, May 5th for Category 2 and Category 3 open burning. It's prohibited in the Prince George and Stuart Nechako Forest Districts. As a reminder, that includes Prince George, Robson Valley, and the Van Jam Fire Zones, except areas within municipal boundaries. That region stretches from south of Prince George all the way up to the Yukon border. We'll have to look at municipal announcements for information on fire bans within those specific municipalities, like the city of Prince George proper, for example. It ought to be noted that this prohibition, as of now, does not ban Category 1, or campfires, that are a half meter high by a half meter wide or smaller, or the use of cooking stoves that use gas, propane, or briquettes. Before lighting a fire of any size, always check for any BC Wildfire Service open fire prohibitions in your area. Also be sure to check with your local government for any bylaw restrictions in your area.
For the latest information on current wildfire activity, prohibitions, restrictions, road closures, and air quality advisories, visit bcwildfire.ca, make use of the BC Wildfire map,
or use the BC Wildfire app on your mobile device.
And now for the news
bulletin. In the world of sports locally, if you haven't heard, the playoff run of the Prince George Spruce Kings has unfortunately come to an end in Nanaimo against the Nanaimo Clippers. The final match was held Wednesday, May 6, with a final score of 2 for Prince George and 6 for Nanaimo.
Not a bad season, though. And better luck next year, team. Last week, on Tuesday, May 5th, the residents of Prince George were greeted by a mysterious entity in the evening sky around 10 p.m. What was it? Who was it? What could it be? Well, fortunately, there are experts right here in town who can point us in the right direction and add clarity to this blurry situation. Malhar Kinderkar, president of the Prince George Astronomical Society, joined us for an interview to get to the bottom of that mystery and also explore a larger issue. You may have heard of dark sky conservation, sure, in terms of creating light pollution down here on Earth. Our national park in Jasper is one of these such areas. But this phenomena that showed up in our night sky is actually indicative of a lot of the human-related activity that happens in our lower Earth orbit, just outside our atmosphere and outer space. Here's a clip with Mr. Kinderkar from that interview.
It's more important at the same time is it's actually impacting astronomy. It's also impacting our night sky. You know, it's because the amount of satellites we have in our low Earth orbit and geosynchronous orbit, it is absolutely mind-boggling. And there are more and more satellites being launched almost every single day. So for professional astronomers like us, it's getting more and more challenging to do science, to do sky surveys. And not just for professional astronomers, but it also affecting stargazers and people who want to do astrophotography, people want to just take a look at the night sky, be out in a dark location. But a lot of times what they're seeing is there are satellites going all across the sky every single second.
Learn more about the blurry mystery visiting our evening sky that mysterious evening of May 5th, right here on CFUR 88.7 FM, after the summary. When venturing outside of our fair city, be aware that we do have two fire bans already, a Category 3 and Category 2 fire ban. There is no Category 1 fire ban, which does allow for small campfires right now, though. Isn't it fortunate that we had such a good snowpack this winter, which is made for a lot of snow melt? You might think that puts us in the clear. However, something happens pretty much every spring, whether we had a lot of precipitation or not. It's called the spring dip, and it makes for a fire hazard. It may sound counterintuitive at first, but here's a clip with Carly DeRosier, a BC Wildfire Service fire information officer, explaining this springtime phenomena.
What spring dip refers to is the period of time between when the snow melts and when the forest fuels, trees, shrubs, those kinds of things, once they absorb the moisture from the ground and their leaves and needles are then kind of full of moisture again. So it's the period of time when they're still dormant from the winter and they haven't absorbed the moisture in the ground to replenish and make the leaves and needles more resistant to wildfire. So it's generally this period. It really depends where you are in the province is the biggest determining factor of when we will see these spring dip conditions. Currently, we are seeing that in many areas of the Prince George Fire Center. So the needles on the trees are really low in moisture content, and that makes them very receptive to ignition. So it's this period of time in the spring where the fuels haven't absorbed that moisture. And even though we do see generally cooler temperatures in the spring, there is still this period of heightened risk of wildfire until those forest fuels have absorbed that moisture from the ground.
More from Fire Information Officer Carly DeRosier on the fire season outlook for 2026, and more of an exploration into holdover fires, the zombie fires that keep coming back, later after this segment on Due North. With prices at the pump ever rising in recent weeks, you may be wondering, hey, don't we produce our own fuel right here in Prince George Clayley today? Shouldn't that make a difference? Helping us explore the nature of that complex system is Stefan Mueller of Arbios Biotech, talking about the role their Chunto Hona facility, producing bio-oil, plays in the local, regional, and provincial energy security picture. Spoiler alert, this clip won't change your summer travel plans. This facility, on its own, at this point in time, will not have a vast impact on the price of the pump or overall provincial energy security, but it's a piece of the puzzle.
It's a piece of the puzzle, and more importantly, it's a stepping stone. So this is really a brand new type of facility for not only Prince George, but the world at this scale. And as you're scaling up, you need this level of scale as a stepping stone so that you can then go larger and continue to get larger and larger and larger.
And if you've been thinking a bit about energy sovereignty, maybe you've been thinking a bit about food sovereignty. Here's a little feature with our interview with April Otteson coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an average person. I got to go get groceries at the grocery store. Perhaps I agree that prices of food and groceries are increasing over my lifetime, but what am I going to do about it? I'm just an average guy. Why do I care about this? Why do I care about food sovereignty in northern BC and Prince George?
If you're food sovereign, then you have food security. If you're food secure, you don't necessarily have food sovereignty.
Gotcha.
And I want to be the boss of me. I don't know about you, but I like being the boss of me. I like eating what I want to eat. I want to put nutritious, beautiful food into my body.
It's a good feeling.
It's a great feeling. The biggest piece is having control over what goes into your body. I've got four pillars of our food system. Is that we want to create a food system that is socially just, it's economically viable, environmentally sound, and above all, humane. So that's the aim of our food charter, the draft food charter that we've created.
Maybe I don't care so much about what goes into my body, but maybe I care more about what comes out of my pocket.
Yes, and that is a big, big, big deal. Canadians are facing persistently high prices, and this is in a retail environment that is dominated by a small number of very powerful large grocery store chains, and we know who they are here. We used to have some independent grocers in Prince George, PG Independent Grocers. So even though these companies, these corporations are reporting the highest profits ever, our grocery prices are going through the roof. And there isn't, you know, they don't need to have these exorbitant prices. So if you don't buy what they're selling, then they don't have power over you. So if you have a more powerful and dominant local food system, then you're not as vulnerable to the vagaries of climate change and poor weather conditions or poor soil. A food charter also talks about, you know, the environmental aspect, about like a lot of the food that ends up in these grocery stores, these global chains, is not harmoniously harvested, and they use a lot of herbicides and pesticides. Sort of the food is beaten out of the soil, basically. And so we're losing soil to this poor kind of farming. And when you produce food yourself, especially when you support a local food system, you know your farmer, you know your rancher, you know how they're producing the food. And then it's not always a problem. The transportation isn't always a problem because we're, you know, transporting large quantities, you know, and it means that it can be as efficient as one little farm truck going back and forth to town, you know, 30 kilometers. But when you are able to source food locally, then you have more control over how the animals are being treated, how the farm workers are being treated, how the food is being treated, how it's being produced.
Ms. Otteson, a number of her local colleagues, and a number of you, dear residents of Prince George, Clayley, Tanay, who submitted feedback in the official community plan surveys, or OCP surveys, indicated a desire for the city of Prince George to adopt a food charter. For ideas and developments on that, stay tuned to the Due North Newsroom on CFUR 88.7 FM. Over at the College of New Caledonia, April 30th marked their fiscal year end. And just prior to that, they announced a balanced budget would be presented. This comes as a surprise to some, as they have cited significant revenue shortfall ahead of this in the multi-millions of dollars. So as you would expect, that means this budget reflects a lot of cuts. And a lot of those cuts are in the form of faculty layoffs. College of New Caledonia President Cindy Heitman made herself available to our questions on April 28th. Here's a preview of our conversation in which she noted the difficulty of making the hard decisions required in order to balance this budget.
I think what's really hard about the situation, and especially when you are having to reduce your workforce, these are our friends, these are our colleagues, these are people we see every day in the halls, and it has been a really difficult time for the college right now. At the same time, trying to remind everybody we have to keep going. We need to move forward and position ourselves to be able to grow in the future. So to say it's been difficult, that's one way absolutely to describe it. But for others, it has been absolutely heartbreaking as you come into the building on days like this.
Well, difficult decisions have been and are being made. CNC President Cindy Heitman does feel optimistic about the projected growth of the region.
I think right now this region and this community is about to experience a growth that I don't think we've experienced in a very long time with the Look West strategy. The major projects in the Northwest directly impact our community.
Despite positive possible outcomes down the road, the college is still facing current financial difficulties. Meanwhile, student representatives at the college find it challenging to have an optimistic outlook for the 2026-27 year. Student representative on the Board of Governors and business and management representative at the College of New Caledonia's Student Union, Kevin Dormani, spoke with us on the student perspective of this budget, the cuts, and not necessarily feeling like a priority for the college.
Heard various provincial politicians make reference to this, you know, David Eby, various ministers. It's been alluded to that this area of the province or the province itself, it's on the verge of an economic boon. There's been a lot of federal infrastructure projects announced. There's mines that are pending being open. All these things are waiting. Do you feel that you have a place or are well positioned to be able to take advantage of that should it happen, given the current circumstances?
No, the current circumstances like don't feel like we are being included into that progress. And I think like if your education sector is struggling, I don't know how you plan to progress as a nation. How do you plan to like develop a region if your students are suffering? That are your future labors. And that's problematic in itself, like contradictory actually, yeah.
You can catch that interview and more on CFUR.ca, frequencynews.ca, and following this news summary on Due North News. Tune in to Due North, 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. weekdays, and 24/7 on CFUR.ca for locally grown, crafted, and curated local news and information. With your host, Ian Gregg, this segment is brought to you in part by the Local Journalism Initiative. Contact the newsroom anytime by emailing newsroom@cfur.ca or by calling 778-693-2387 extension 6. Also view our content online at frequencynews.ca.